kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I'm your host, Joe, joining as usual, Cole. Cole, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay.
Just okay?
Yeah. I'm still sick, but I'm doing okay. How are you, Joe?
I'm doing good, and I'm doing good because we have a guest joining us today. How's that for an awful segue?
Fantastic.
Andrew Marsh of Megacat Studios, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, thanks.
Do you prefer Andy or Andrew?
Yeah, whatever floats your boat.
I'll go with Andy then.
Sounds great.
Cole, you could go with Andrew. We'll just confuse him.
Okay.
Fantastic.
Do I ever even like refer to the guests by their names on this show? Like, I always just let you do that. And I'm just like, people we're speaking to.
Dear person. So, Andy, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty well.
Anything fun going on in your world today?
Having some computer issues, but I'm working through those right now. And other than that, you know, designing video games, that's always fun.
Well, as someone who has a notoriously horrible computer, I can feel you and I can sympathize on the computer problems.
Yeah.
But you are here from Megacat Studios. You guys just released Coffee Crisis on Xbox One recently. For those who don't know what this game is, tell us what it is. Give us the sales pitch.
So Coffee Crisis is... we call it like a Neo Rogue brawler. It's sort of like an old school arcade style game, sort of like the old Ninja Turtles arcade games and like Streets of Rage. But we have these randomized modifiers that happen throughout the game. And these will happen whenever like the screen locks and you have to fight your way out of it. And it will roll up to 5 random modifiers that will either be things that like help the enemies out, or it could be things that help you out, or it could be like cool screen effects and stuff. And it ties into Twitch and Mixer integration. So if someone's streaming the game, then people watching the stream get to vote on the modifiers that happen instead of them being random.
Ooh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's been pretty fun testing that stuff. you learn real fast. No one ever helps the player. No one ever votes to help the player, especially when you start getting into the Mixer stuff, because then people have to like actually put like Mixer's currency into it and stuff. So yeah, they're always going for sparks. Like, yeah, they're always using their sparks to do the worst possible thing to someone.
for the sparks thing, are there tiers of like cheaper things are nicer for the player, more expensive things are dickish to the player?
No, I think we do it pretty standard for all of them. You know, it's that way. It just sort of never incentivizes people to go one way or the other. And I think that's the best way to do it.
I don't know. Given how awful people are in nature, it seems like
that's
you would want
to. Funny though. we've gotten some pretty great moments out of streams of it, of like just people going real hard on people. But people will just go like hard out of nowhere too. Like they might like do some pretty easy stuff, and then all of a sudden, like just the whole group just drops the hammer on someone.
Oh God! And you
that
said you could have
me.
Up to. That's because you're a bad person, Cole.
I know, and I also have way too many sparks for my own good, so, and there's not a lot to spend them on, so when I find somebody that I can just dump some chaos into their life, it makes me feel better.
Perfect game for that, by the way. A lot of the modifiers make things go like pretty chaotic, which is always fun to watch.
Give us an example of some of the modifiers that people can run into in the game.
Sure. So we have them broken up into categories, and that's what people vote on. So like one of the categories will spawn a group of harder enemies, or like a larger group of enemies that would normally be there. Another one will make like elite versions of them, which have like a golden glow to them, and they'll be a lot stronger. They can take more hits. They can deal out more damage. But then we'll have cool screen effects, which people will go for those sometimes a lot too. Where it will like put like a CRT filter over it, or make it look like it's on the old Virtual Boy or something.
Yeah, we ran into some pretty good ones while we were playing it. The one that kind of turns everything to like, it looked like a sketch drawing.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. The sketch one's pretty nice. There's another nice, like, comic book one that sort of gives everything that sort of dot-printed, like, screen-printed look to it.
Ooh, I didn't run into that one. That one sounds cool.
Yeah, I didn't either.
Are some more rare than others?
Yeah, we tried to balance those out a little bit, because some, even with, like, the screen effects, some of them will make the game harder than others. So we tried to weight probability based off of how much, if they make the game more difficult or not. So, like, the ones that make the game, like, way more difficult have a much lower weight when it's deciding which one to give the player.
I don't know. I feel like I've run into a couple of occasions where I've gotten the more enemies, the stronger enemies, the elite enemies all at once with some kind of weird, crazy filter on it, and I would just get my ass handed to me.
Yeah, it can. You can get a bad roll. I mean, that's the joys of the roguelife we live in these days.
You said that you ran into some really funny situations while testing it on Mixer. What are some of the craziest combinations that you've ran into that have just totally fucked people over?
It would probably be people will go pretty heavy on spawning enemies. And so we'll get, like, the ones that would really just mess people's days up is they'll, like, spawn enemies. There'll be, like, elite versions of them. And then there's this one screen effect that we have. It's sort of like, it's supposed to look like a fly's point of view, so it's all segmented.
Oh god.
Wow.
And so, like, I've seen that one come up a couple of times where, like, that combination will hit someone and it's just like, that it just ruins their day.
Oh my lord, that sounds amazing.
apart from the whole Mixer integration, Twitch integration, there's another nifty little thing going on for Coffee Crisis regarding how it's published.
Oh, yeah. So it just recently launched on the Xbox One. It's been out on PC for about 6 months now, but it's been out for over a year for the Sega Genesis on, like, a physical cartridge.
You want to tell us more about how that works?
Yeah, yeah. So that was what we built the first version of the game for. We developed it from the ground up for the Genesis, and it was the initial launch of it was for the Kickstarter for the modern platform stuff. And so one of the, I think it was like a $50 or $60 tier reward was you'd get a physical Genesis copy of the game to play. And so that was really where the project started, was on the Genesis. And so that's sort of the other side of what we do. We develop games for modern platforms like Coffee Crisis, but we also develop games for retro platforms as well. So we have a host of games for the NES, the SNES, and the Sega Genesis. All have physical releases, like complete in box, full color manual, you know, just like it used to be back in the day.
If you had to pick a preference for whether you prefer to develop for modern consoles or historical ones, classic ones, which one would you go for? Would you prefer
I get that question a lot, and I also get which one's harder to develop for a lot.
That's because it's low-hanging fruit, and that's what I'm here for.
And I would pick one or the other. I love doing the retro stuff because that's sort of what I came up on, and I used to do artwork within the technical limitations of old school consoles as a hobby, and it's always been something I've been pretty passionate about. But at the same time, you know, it's a whole different ball game when you're developing for, like, the Xbox One, because there's just so much more in front of you that you can do. You don't have to worry about weird restrictions or any of that stuff. So they sort of have their own pros and cons, I guess. You know, they're both difficult for different reasons. They're both really rewarding for different reasons. So,
how do you make the decision that, hey, I want to make a Sega Genesis game?
Oh, that's how we started. That was the sort of starting idea of the company, was that we wanted to be a dev studio, but we wanted to make games for the consoles we had growing up. Like, the stuff that when we were kids and we wanted to make video games, those were the kind of video games we were thinking of. And so we had the knowledge and means to do the physical manufacturing stuff. I had some technical background working on retro consoles. And so it just sort of seemed like the best way for us to go to really go after what we're passionate about.
Like, what What challenges are there in developing for older consoles? Do you have to track down like old dev kits, or are you just able to kind of make do with the technology we have now to make it work?
We generally use, you know, modern technology to make them. And there's a lot of good community tools out there, and we try to be active parts in that community, because we definitely use like their compilers and things, but we also have such a focus on releasing physical products that we will find like discrepancies between like a community tool and actually implementing it onto a physical cartridge. So that's usually where we come in and try to give back a little bit, where we'll fix that discrepancy and then recommit it to the, you know, the public repo for it and GitHub.
That's pretty cool.
And as far as the art stuff goes, you know, we just use like Photoshop or GIMP or whatever someone uses. As long as you're following the rules of it, then it doesn't really matter what you're using there.
How does the manufacturing come into play? Like, how do you manufacture brand new Sega Genesis or NES cartridges this day and age?
So we kind of do it the way they used to, except without, you know, a machine to do all the soldering for us. It's, you know, we use a computer, burn the program to chips, and then solder them to a PCB. We have injection molds for shells, so we can do a lot of cool colors. And so we just make them, you know.
That's so cool that people are still creating these old generation games and just new experiences that you could play on retro consoles. It's such a cool concept to me.
It is pretty cool. It definitely has a, like, almost an artisanal feel to the physical release side of things. You know, I like to think about it like kind of like how I'm sure someone who has like a craft brewery would think about making beer.
Sega Genesis, the beer of gaming. I'm sorry.
Craft beer of gaming.
I guess craft is an important word in there.
I mean, technically, everything is the beer of something, because beer is just universal.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've never drank beer.
SML podcast, the beer of podcasts.
You're probably a much healthier person than me for it.
Are we like the Zima of podcasts or the Bud Light?
Oh, God. Yeah, we're the Zima of podcasts. That's pretty accurate.
That explains why I'm allowed to be here.
What is the Zima of the Sega Genesis?
The Zima of the Sega Genesis? I would say Zima is a pretty refined drink for distinguished gentlemen in nice hats. If we're going just off of that, probably Vector Man. If we're just going off of clothing choice by people who drink Zima, Michael Jackson's Moonwalker.
That's a well thought out answer.
These are important things that you need to think about.
Oh man, what other consoles could we make you tell us the Zima equivalents of? Or what's the Jaeger of the Sega Genesis?
The Jaeger of the Sega Genesis? It's like Mortal Kombat, right?
The vodka and Red Bull of the Sega Genesis.
I'm happy that this is what this podcast is going to be now. It's just us listing off drinks and me trying to think of games that fit them.
We live to serve is what we're here for.
Zima. We live to serve Zima.
Oh, boy.
Go, Joe. So, ask another question.
I'm getting there. So what are the challenges in bringing a Sega Genesis game to a console, to like a current modern day Xbox One console? What, like, how does that happen?
So the biggest challenge to me would be the fact that we couldn't just put like the Genesis version of the Coffee Crisis on the Xbox One. We're going to do some stuff like that with some of our smaller games, but for a larger game like Coffee Crisis, that wasn't going to be acceptable. It wouldn't come out with like a polished, good product for the platform. And so it becomes, you have to build the game from the ground up again using modern technology and modern engines. We did it in Unity. And so we sort of had to recreate the game again and then see how we could push it further than the Genesis version did. And so that becomes the challenge, is just sort of having to start it over and do it correctly for the platform that we want to release it for.
What do you mean by do it correctly?
Well, the standards, I would say the standards are a little different, right? Because with the Genesis, you can have up to 4 megabytes in your game. That's it.
I mean, that's huge.
So, yeah. So taking a 4 megabyte Genesis game and making it into something sort of polished and worthwhile for a modern platform, I think there's a sliding standard there for the quality of the final product. And the standards for a modern platform release are going to be much higher because you have much more available to you.
I don't know. I've seen some pretty shitty modern games come out.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's always exceptions to the rule, I guess. But yeah, that would be the biggest challenge, is just sort of taking something that was a retro console idea and then turning it into a modern idea.
What kind of changes have to be made to the game to make it more modern?
Game feels pretty big, you know, like how does it feel when you do things in the game? You know, is there good feedback? Coming up with cool features that you wouldn't have been able to do on a Genesis, like the mixer integration is a great example.
What? Genesis didn't have mixer integration?
People have asked me, anytime someone asks me about that, I like sit there for a minute and start thinking about how that would work.
Use the X band.
Yeah.
There's a will, there's a way.
It's like, oh man, I bet there's like something we could develop to connect that to the internet.
If you figured that out, you would be rich, because
yeah.
There's a lot of people who do stream from older consoles. Yeah. That would.
Yeah.
But I wonder if there is a way to make it work with something like the X band.
I don't know about the X band, just because I don't think you could hook it up to like an Ethernet cable. You'd have to use like a phone line.
Dial up, baby.
Yeah.
Get the AOL discs back out. Let's go old school with this.
People have done some like proof of concept stuff with the Super Nintendo, where you could send like button presses across an internet connection. So like your button inputs for a game would get sent across an internet connection to another console.
Wow, really?
Yeah. And to varying degrees of success, but people have worked on things that can do stuff like that. There's another thing that someone worked on that can load up Twitter feeds on the NES.
That's insane.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in theory, yeah, you could do something like that. It would just take a lot of electrical and software engineering to make something like that work.
So what game are you going to make to incorporate that?
Yeah. We always like to throw around crazy ideas. Ones that high don't stick.
What is the craziest idea that you guys have thought up for a retro console and actually made happen?
I think Creepy Brawlers was pretty nuts. It's a boxing game for the NES where you fight classic movie monsters. And we really had to like delve into games like Punch Out and stuff and really sort of use tricks in the NES in ways that they weren't really meant to be used to make it work right. Like the main character is actually part of the background, and we just scroll his part of the background around to move him and stuff. And that's the same trick you would see in older games that have that cool like parallax scrolling effect in a background. But we were using it for this like really weird specific purpose. And so that game, from a technical standpoint, I think is like probably one of our most interesting ones.
That's pretty cool. What is the punch out of alcoholic beverages?
The punch out of alcoholic beverages? Like just like an entire bottle of Wild Turkey, and there's something that's going to make you black out.
It's that sensation of getting knocked out by Mike Tyson in alcoholic form.
Like, the second you're face down on the ground, that's the second you're like trying to fight Tyson.
And you may or may not wake up with part of your ear missing.
Yeah.
Or Mario's talking to you, counting to 10. Win-win, no, either way.
It's not about Mario anymore. It's all Waluigi all the time. I don't even understand my own references.
He's the true handle. I did it
because I saw it on Twitter.
He's the true hero of the Nintendo family, you know?
Do you have facts to back that up?
Well, you see, he's like Luigi, but his name starts with a W.
Yeah, that makes sense. That checks out. That logic checks out. So Coffee Crisis has an amazing soundtrack to it. Where did such a brutal metal soundtrack come from for a Genesis game?
Our the main guy that does our music's named Mitch Foster. He is a crazy talented musician. And so we have him doing all the soundtracks for our games right now. And he used to be in a metal band before he started doing music professionally. And so we were talking to him. We're like, yeah, we want to have this metal soundtrack, especially for the PC version, because we can have, you know, like a more arranged sound to it. And he got like super excited about it. It's like, I'm going to call some of my old guys. We're going to get this done. And he just knocked that soundtrack out with them.
Nice. And, I love the soundtrack to the game.
Yeah, he hit it right out of the park with it. It's really good.
Do you know if there's any plans to release the soundtrack for sale anywhere? I know it's available on Steam. If you buy the game, you could also buy the soundtrack. But like, I'm wondering if there's any plans for like a Bandcamp release or an iTunes release or anything.
We haven't talked about doing any kind of physical stuff yet, which we're still gauging if we want to do that one or not. We're going to be selling like cards at conventions. And I'm trying to remember the name exactly for it, but it'll have like a code on it, and you can use the code to download the soundtrack.
Because I'm dying to pick up the soundtrack for this, but like the only way I found that I can do it is I would also have to rebuy the game on Steam and then buy the soundtrack for the the DLC. I hate this Steam treats DLC soundtracks as DLC.
I agree. We were like trying to think of a way to make that work, but we had to do it. Like, that's just how it makes you do it.
Yeah. I might have to pick up the game again just so I could get the soundtrack. It is so good.
But I know we're going to be selling them at conventions pretty soon.
You guys get to a lot of conventions?
Oh, yeah, tons of them. We're actually going to be in PAX West next week.
Oh, nice.
I think we're going to be at GDEX right before that, too, in Columbus, Ohio.
Nice. You guys get to MAGFest at all?
Yeah, every year. So it's like one of our favorite events.
I wonder if I've run into you guys at MAGFest, because I'm there every single year as well. And I run into so many people that I can't keep track of who I've met and who I haven't met.
You probably have. Were you there last year?
Yes, I've been to every single MAGFest.
So over in the MIV section, like the indie developer area, we were running like a retro console homebrew area there. It was like a big section with like a bunch of old CRT TVs. And I think there was a couch. We were running that.
That is awesome.
We're going to be running it again at the next MAGFest.
I will definitely have to make sure to stop by and see you guys then.
Yeah, awesome. That'd be a lot of fun.
Are you going to be go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's Drop Cards is the name of the service that we're using for the Coffee Crisis soundtrack. So we're going to be selling like cards where you can redeem the soundtrack.
Drop Cards. All right. By the way, apologies if my cat is being picked up by my microphone. She will not shut up right now, and I don't know why. All I hear is meow, meow in the background. It is driving me nuts, and I feel so bad. Oh my God, cat, shut the fuck up.
She's having a moment.
She is. She is losing her mind. I don't know what is going on with her right now.
It's because they've all decided Predator needs to come live with me.
Yeah.
The reoccurring gag that I'm going to take his cat named Predator. She's going to come live with me, and she don't know it yet. But it's okay.
I wish there was a way that I could just shut her up, but she's in a different room, and I don't know how I can do that without actually standing up and scaring her away. So, Cole, you think of a question. I'm going to shut my cat up.
I have to think of... So, see, now I was sitting here thinking of questions, and then he goes, Cole, you have to think of a question. My brain goes, what? And everything's gone. So, tell me about what's coming up next for you guys. Now that you've got Coffee Crisis released, do you have any future plans to bring any of your other games to Xbox?
So, I said earlier we're going to be doing a couple of our retro games, just doing straight ports of them. They'll be like a little bit cheaper than Coffee Crisis was, obviously. So, it's going to be Little Medusa which is a top-down puzzle game where you're playing as this cute little Gorgon girl, and you're turning people into stone and using them to make bridges. And then Creepy Brawlers that I was talking about, I believe, is also going to be getting a straight port to the Xbox.
Will there be any future updates to Coffee Crisis, or are you just going to leave it where it's at and not add any DLC so that it's the same as the Genesis version?
We aren't 100% on if we're going to do another. So the Xbox version already includes it, but the PC mm-hmm. version got a content update at the beginning of the summer. And it added some new levels and new enemy types and more modifiers. And so the Xbox version came with that, just sort of shipped with it.
Yeah.
And so we have been talking about maybe doing another content update for it. We just don't have any real plans to announce for it yet.
What kind of content could be added? By the way, I'm back.
We could add new levels, new enemy types.
Modifiers.
Yeah, more modifiers. I was telling her just before you came back that the PC, the Xbox version shipped with it, but the PC version got a content update like at the beginning of the summer that added like 4 new stages and a bunch of new enemy types and a new boss, like actually 3 new bosses.
Oh, wow. That's a lot of content to just be in an update.
Yeah, well, we wanted, especially for the people that adopted it early on Steam, we wanted to do something special for them and release a little bit more content for the game.
Nice. That's awesome to do. I love it when companies just release free updates to their games.
Yeah, it's always a pretty good feeling.
So, Cole, what other fun stuff did you ask while I was away?
I actually did ask another question, Joe, because I asked what was coming up for them as well, if there were other games being brought to Xbox. And he answered yes, and you weren't here for that. So it's your fault, not mine.
Then I will have to listen back to my own show so I can hear what was said. Are you guys going to be supporting other platforms as well, like the PS4 and the Switch?
Yeah. Coffee Crisis is going to be released on the PS4 and Switch as well.
Other releases as well going to be making it to all three platforms?
Yeah. Ultimately, we would like to try to be as cross-platform as possible. We keep laughing about Little Medusa is like our testament to us being as cross-platform as humanly possible, because it's on the NES, SNES, Sega Genesis. I told her while you're gone, it's gonna get a straight port to Xbox, probably PS4 and Switch as well. We're talking about maybe doing a DOS version of it.
Oh my God.
That is dedication to a cause right there.
Yeah.
Please tell me that you're going to find a way to release it on like 5 1/4 floppy disks.
I think that's the plan is to release it on floppy disk if we do it.
That is amazing. Can you remember the days when an entire game would fit on like 3 meg on a floppy disk?
Can you remember the days when you had to have like 5 floppy disks? It always cracks me up.
I remember playing text games.
Yeah, anytime I see like some 40 gig game come out, I'm like, oh man, remember when I had to install Doom on 5 floppy disks?
And it would always hang up partway through and you have to start over again.
Yeah.
Windows has encountered an error. Well, fuck you too.
I remember those old days when my computer didn't have, it had 2 meg of RAM and it wasn't enough to actually run Doom. Those hurt my soul. Those days, I do not miss them.
My computer as a kid was put together by parts we found at the flea market. And I don't know how it ran anything, but I do remember playing Doom on it.
Man.
I mean, you can put Doom on almost anything. Apparently not anything, as we've just learned.
Yeah.
But almost everything.
Yeah, it ran Wolfenstein at least, so I had that going for me.
Now you could probably play it on an Alexa. I just gave them an idea because they already put Skyrim on there.
Oh no.
Alexa just sort of describes what's going on.
Turn left. Come
full circle to the text games, text based games.
Alexa, shoot shotgun. You blew up a demon. Alexa,
you
move
missed,
forward.
Dumbass.
No, that would be a Duke Nukem game that makes fun of you for missing.
I remember playing those too.
Yep.
Remember when Duke Nukem wasn't a first person game?
Yeah, man.
Those were the
Duke
days.
Nukem 2's like Duke Nukem 2 is a really solid platformer.
I miss those days.
Was it Wolfenstein that you had to walk around, like, hug the walls to find the secrets?
Yeah, you just keep, like, jamming the space bar on.
Yeah. My mom would be like, what are you doing? You're making too much noise. Look, I'm trying to find secrets. It's important, okay?
Good stuff. Oh, man. I know we've been chatting for quite a while. Is there anything that you wanted to talk about that we didn't bring up?
I mean, I guess I could talk more about, like, some of the stuff we have coming out soon. We just did our NES and Genesis releases of Little Medusa, which is a pretty fun top-down puzzle game. It's our first to go cross-platform on retro consoles. And we got some cool PC stuff that we're working on right now that's going to eventually make its way to consoles as well. Logjammers is a pretty fun arcade 1v1 game where you're sort of doing like the lumberjack log running thing, and you're throwing an axe back and forth and trying to score on a goal.
That's amazing.
That's going to be probably coming out on PC first, and then we're going to try to do a cross-platform launch for all the consoles.
Is that something that you're going to try including online play with?
Yeah. That one's going to have online play. It's pretty crucial for that game because it's competitive. It's competitive and 1v1 and really fast-paced, so it would work really well in an online setting.
Nice. What else do you guys have lined up?
So much stuff. we try to do a pretty big host of retro console projects every year. We've been around for a few years now. We already have about a dozen games on classic consoles. If you go to MegaCatStudios.com, we have them all on there, along with demo ROMs. If you have an emulator, you can get a demo and try the games out.
That's really cool. Wow, you guys do have a ton of games on there.
Yeah, we got a few.
That's how come I knew to ask what was coming up, because I did my research, Joe.
Man, I would go poor so quickly on your store.
That's I guess great to hear.
If someone were to only jump in and pick up one of your games, which one do you think is worth picking up the most?
Out of the retro stuff, Little Medusa. It's a huge game, especially even compared to like our other titles. It's got like 60 worlds and 6 pretty sweet boss fights in it, and a really cool story with like really nice illustrations and things. It's a pretty big project. There's a reason why it was the first thing we released on all 3 retro platforms that we developed for.
And you said that one's coming to modern consoles as well, right?
Yeah, we're going to do, I think that's going to be one of our like ones where we just sort of do a straight port of it and sell it for like a little less than we would like Coffee Crisis, you know?
I mean, it's not like you guys are asking for a lot of money with Coffee Crisis.
Yeah, but, you know, at the same time, it is definitely going to be just an NES game, so...
Not that there's anything wrong with that, because NES
absolutely.
I think NES games hold up better than most N64 games.
That's pretty true. That was such a weird time, though. That was like when people were first learning how to do 3D stuff.
Early 3D is so ugly.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, man.
Like, go back, try to play Jumping Flash now. Oh, my Lord.
It's crazy because, you know, we're all about hitting that kind of nostalgia factor, especially for ourselves, you know, and now it's starting to shift towards like the N64 and PlayStation 1. And so it's interesting to see people like look back on those kind of games with sort of the same nostalgia that like I would feel for Castlevania.
Yeah, those people are wrong.
I don't know, man. Sometimes it could be a really fun aesthetic. Look at like Silent Hill game, like early Silent Hill games. Like, I think in some applications, that sort of low poly, lo-fi, grainy look is like so good. Metal Gear Solid, that's a great example. True. I think like just sort of that sort of lo-fi look to it just sort of fed right into it.
Yeah, you had to have more imagination back then, because it wasn't so lifelike and realistic where everything just made sense. You still had to use your imagination and fill in some of the blanks.
Yeah.
I kind of just had a moment where I realized that in a very short amount of time, my kids are going to be looking back affectionately and remembering playing the Xbox 360.
we're already rapidly approaching that point.
That's going to be retro.
we're very much approaching that point. I remember someone saying that at a convention, something about how kids are reaching the point where kids are going to be nostalgic about the PS3. And I'm just like, oh my God, no.
Oh, I'm feeling old just hearing this.
Yeah.
My sciatic is acting up.
Yeah, I like just instantly deflated when I heard someone say that. I was like, oh no.
Hey man, what was your first console? The Xbox One. Why?
But I know I've told my oldest daughter wants to be a game developer. I mention that every so often. Surprise. But I mentioned to her that when I was a kid, I used to go to where my mom worked at a laundromat, and there was a little corner store nearby, and they had arcades and pinball machines and arcade machines. And I'd go there and play Street Fighter and Mortal Kombat and pinball. And she just thinks it's like the oddest thing that you had to go somewhere and play a game in a cabinet.
Yeah.
And then go home and not have it.
Yeah. The arcades are a dying breed. We have a couple in Pittsburgh, but I think the trend now is to do like barcades to sort of tap into our market, like people our age. But yeah, that's not something kids understand. You know, they don't know about going to the arcade. And the fact that the games in the arcade were better than the ones we were playing at home, too.
Yeah.
Like, you went to go to play an arcade game. It was something special.
There was no way you were going to go home and load up the NES and have nearly as many characters as you have when you played at the arcade.
Man, if you guys have arcades out in Pittsburgh, I might have to take a road trip.
Yeah. In the neighborhood that I live in, we actually have two. And a barcade that just opened up recently.
That's awesome. We have nothing out my way at all.
You're about to get a visit from Joe. He's going to knock on your window and be like, hi, I'm here to play arcade games.
Knock on the window?
Yeah, thanks. You know, it wouldn't be so bad when it slips if you didn't call it out.
I have to. When I hear something like that, I have to call attention to it.
I'm too sick to hide my accent very well today. That kind of day.
Oh, it is one of those days. Everything's breaking. Everyone's sick. It's just one of those days.
Yeah, my computer's finally, I think, on the mend now.
That's where you start, like, tapping it on the monitor and going, I love you, baby. Please be okay.
Oh, man. So, anything else that you want to talk about before we wrap up?
No, I think we covered it. We're going to be, I could throw out some convention stuff. We're going to be at GDEX in Columbus, and that's going to be next week. And then immediately right after that, we're going to be over in Seattle at PAX West. Those are the two big ones we're going to be hitting up. We talked about MAGFest. We'll definitely be there. We'll be running the homebrew showcase in the indie game area.
Are you guys going to try getting to Mag Labs?
We are going to be going to Mag Labs. Thank you for reminding me. Nice. I should remember that because we are hosting a panel there.
Oh, nice. I'm trying to make that one happen on my end.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty fun. The panel is going to be all about, you know, developing games for retro hardware and designing them and the challenges with that.
Nice. So PAX West, Mag Labs, GDEX, where else can people keep up with what you guys are doing?
Find us on megacatstudios.com. Social media, we're Megacat Studios on all of it, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. We're just Megacat Studios on all of that. It's a great Facebook and Twitter are great spots for to like get updated on what we have going on. We do some giveaways and stuff too.
Someone's phone went off.
That wasn't me this time.
That was me.
I used to record the podcast on my phone every week, and if I didn't remember to hit silent, you'd hear that when my sister would start messaging me.
Yeah, that would be fun. So you said Little Medusa is going to be coming to console. When should people expect that? This year, next year?
This year, as of right now, we don't have an official date announced for it, but we're looking at releasing it this year.
Awesome. So people will have to keep an eye out for that as well. Andy, it's been awesome having you on chatting about everything.
Yeah, thanks, man. It's been good.
I'm trying to think of any last drink requests that we could think of.
What's the Zima of conventions?
The Zima of conventions? All right, we're going to go with the less refined side of Zima and more of like the really bad hangover you get afterwards from drinking way too much, and that would be MAGFest, because you probably are drinking way too much while you're there.
I was just going to say, if you're going with that, I'm going with MAGFest as well.
Now I understand why Joe goes to MAGFest.
MAGFest isn't a convention. MAGFest is a party.
Yes, I say the same thing. And it's like, oh, man, the atmosphere is so great there. Everyone's having so much fun.
That's why I'm excited for Mag Labs, because it's going to be smaller and more intimate. And I haven't been to a Mag Labs or a MAGFest Classic in quite a while. So I'm very much looking forward to trying to get there this year. And if I do, I'll have to say hi to you guys.
I have one request if you get to go, Joe.
Okay, what's that?
You have to take two Zimas and you have to find Andrew, and I want a picture.
Do they still sell it? I know it came back for a limited time. I don't know if it's still being sold or not.
You're just gonna have to get them on eBay, dude. We're drinking 15-year-old Zimas, man.
It's for a good cause.
We'll figure out a way to make it happen. But Andrew, again, it was awesome having you on chatting. Everyone else, stick around. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with more show. Do you have any final words to wrap this up?
I guess check us out online. Try our games out, obviously. And I hope you have a great time with them. We are out there to entertain you.
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for hanging around. Thanks again to Andy from MegaCat Studios for joining us in chat. And that was pretty fun, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
We got to talk about Zima.
The Zima of podcasts.
Yes. Yes, we are. We are shitty and we don't satisfy you at all.
You don't even give you the benefit of being drunk by the end.
Pretty much. But we have more show to take care of. A lot of news this week. It was Gamescom this week. A lot of release dates were announced, and a lot of fun stuff was announced. Should we dive into this stuff?
Let's go.
All right. We're going to start with some shitty news that is not Gamescom related. And that is Twitch and Amazon have changed up how their Prime services are going to be working. Have you heard this stuff?
Oh, yeah. Who hasn't?
First off, Amazon is discontinuing their 20% discount on all pre-orders. First, they changed it to exclude collector's editions. Then they changed it to exclude remakes and remasters. And now they're just getting rid of it completely and replacing it with $10 credit on select pre-order games, which I think can suck my butthole.
I was under the impression that had already stopped completely anyway, and it must have just been like when the collector's edition thing passed. And I just assumed it was everything. Yeah. So then everybody lost their shit about it. I was like, but didn't that already happen?
Nope. Now it did.
Now it did. I was just being clairvoyant and didn't realize it.
Now it did, and it sucks.
It is a bit of, I wonder if maybe the developers and publishers didn't have a say in that, because there's a lot of places that don't want the game to be sold. Like an iPhone, you can't have a sale on an iPhone unless Apple says you can have a sale on an iPhone, kind of thing, you know?
I don't know.
So I wondered if maybe that wasn't a thing. It does suck.
It's like stores are doing everything they can to push people towards digital purchases. Like,
that seems to remind me, too, when Ark came out, that there was a big fuss over they wanted to leave it at the $30 price tag if you bought it digitally, or it was like $40 or something like that. It wasn't as high. But then, like, brick and mortar stores refused to let them shelve the game if it was cheaper online.
Yeah, that's stupid.
So they had to raise it to $60 everywhere just to match what they had to sell the retails for.
Yeah, it's stupid. I hate it. But that's not the only shitty thing happening. Twitch is changing their Prime service and removing ad-free viewing as part of the benefits.
I've never had ads on Twitch until this week. And I was like, the fuck is this? It blows. Because the thing with it is that if you're going to go through the effort of having low latency and all that, it defeats the purpose if ads are interrupting the stream and then you can't hear the streamer talking to you.
Mm-hmm.
So you pop in the chat, you say hi, the streamer says hi back, and you're like in La La Land because you didn't hear it. You were watching an ad for...
Welcome to the stream. I didn't hear you welcome me because I had to watch some shitty 30-second ad.
Yeah, it's very weird, and it certainly cuts into the whole interactivity aspect that they're trying to match up with Mixer on. It just seems to defeat the purpose.
Jacob and I were talking about this on the last episode before we started the reviews, and he asked me if I'm going to stop using Twitch, and I'm going to be a filthy hypocrite and stay on Twitch. It's just I'm going to encourage everybody to use Adblock because I don't give a fuck. It's not like those ads ever give me anything.
Well, because remember I was like, oh, I have never seen ads. I have Adblock on Twitch. I had it disabled for a really long time because you used to be able to watch ads to get bits.
Mm-hmm.
And then somewhere around November or December of 2017, that just stopped working for me. After a year of being perfect and being, you know, bits out the ass, I couldn't watch ads to save myself. I can't even still. I can hover over. It says watch ad, and it comes up with the little circle with the lines through it and says unavailable. And that's it just weird. Won't let me do it. So after that, like maybe 2 or 3 months ago, I was like, oh, well, if you're not going to let me watch ads, fuck you. And I put the ad block back on. But even with ad block turned on, I still see the ads this week in front of the streams before I start.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything yet. But if I do, I'll make sure to update all my ad preference. Like I use uBlock. So I don't know if it's just which ad block provider you use.
Yeah.
That does it, but fuck them. I pay for Prime. I'm supposed to have ad-free viewing. They can go to hell. So I encourage all of our listeners to use Adblock, block all the ads, do what you gotta do, cause it doesn't, I don't get money from ads. If I do, it might be a penny. So big goddamn deal.
And if you are subbed to us on Twitch, then you didn't use Twitch Prime. If you used your actual cash to sub, then you still get the ad-free experience.
Is it?
Yeah. It's just Twitch Prime folks like me will end up with the ad anyway.
I can't wait until I get ads. Like I'm watching my own stream. I can't wait for an ad to pop up.
It will happen, I'm sure.
It's me. It's my own stream. Oh, I would be so pissed.
I would not be surprised. I'm a little more surprised that it doesn't happen. Although I guess they technically consider you a subscriber of your own channel because you get your emotes and everything. So
yeah.
Without paying yourself cash. I'm waiting for that day to come when they're like, oh, you can't have your emotes anymore unless you subscribe to yourself because they get half of that, you know?
That would suck so much.
They just want their half.
That would be so shitty.
You know that's something that has been floated in a boardroom at the least.
Oh, God. That would be so bad.
And if not, thank goodness nobody listens to us. And nobody will hear my idea.
Oh, man. What other news is there? Forza Horizon 2 is hitting the end of life status and will be delisted from the Xbox store at the end of September. It's presently a Games with Gold title, but if you wanted to own the game or own the DLC, best jump on that shit ASAP before it's too late.
Yep. It will be gone.
Gone.
I wonder if that's a... Is it end of life because of licensing, I wonder?
Yeah, it seems every 4 years the Forza games go away. Like last year, Forza 5 went away. This year, Horizon 2 is going away. Next year, Forza 6 will be going away. Year after, Forza Horizon 3 is going to go away.
Yeah.
It's like on a 4 year cycle. I guess that's how long they negotiate their licenses for.
That's a pretty good cycle, I guess.
The bright side is every time it's been happening, Microsoft gives the game away for free as Games with Gold.
Yeah. That's kind of a fuck you if you think about it to the licenses, but yeah, it's the way to go about it.
Get it to as many people as possible while you can, right?
Mm-hmm. Because then if you get the game free and you know it's going to hit the end of life and it's going to be delisted, you might as well go ahead and go buy the DLC so you have it.
Yeah, pretty much. I know I picked up the Fast and the Furious DLC pack for it because I never had that, so might as well. It was like $1.25, something crazy.
Oh, is it really that cheap?
Mm-hmm.
I think I might have that in account credit.
And I think the Porsche expansion is pretty cheap as well. I think that's like $2 or something.
Nice.
And I'm pretty sure that has achievements with it, so better jump on that one.
Achievements.
Get your achievers. Halo Master Chief Collection is going to be hitting Game Pass on September 1st, finally, along with the 4K update for the game and the fully reworked online. So that's nifty. Hopefully
this is another one of those where I had just assumed it was already there.
Nope, September 1st. It's finally happening.
Everybody's like, yeah! And I'm like, wait, but wasn't it? I could have swore. Never mind. Game Pass got so big, it's hard to keep up with what's there and what's not.
It really is. It's fucking huge. They were like, oh, we're going to have 100 games. And now it's like 150, 160.
Mm-hmm.
Something ridiculous. I don't know. THQ Nordic has signed a deal with Microsoft. Did you hear about this one?
No.
They're going to be publishing a number of Microsoft games on Steam and for physical PC release. No release dates have been announced, but the games listed are Disneyland Adventures, Rush, a Disney Pixar Adventure, Zoo Tycoon, Ultimate Animal Collection, Super Lucky's Tale, and ReCore Definitive Edition.
Okay, so I knew those games were coming to Steam, but I didn't know THQ Nordic was involved in that.
Yep, they're the ones who are going to be publishing them.
Nice.
And doing all the legwork. I know they did it in the past. Quantum Break, I have a physical edition, a physical collector edition that THQ Nordic published.
Really?
Yeah.
THQ Nordic gets around.
They do. They're kind of slutty.
We love them for it, but, you know, they're like the neighborhood bike.
Speaking of THQ Nordic, they announced a new game coming to the Switch.
Really?
Saints Row the Third.
How old is that game? I remember playing that shit on the 360, and it was Games with Gold then.
Exactly. Saints Row the Third is going to be coming to the Switch.
What an... I don't even know how to respond to this. It's like, what an odd choice.
Yeah, that's about the same reaction I had when I saw that. I'm like, the third? Really? Like, not number four? Not Gat Out of Hell?
I mean, to be fair, I thought three was better than four anyway. Four was ass. I didn't like four.
I like them both. Don't judge me. I love them.
Say I'm judging. I'm silently judging, but because there's a piece of tape over my camera, you can't see me do it.
I'm spying on you, and I could see your tape.
But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, that's a weird one for sure. And then because of Gamescom, some games have gotten some release dates. Devil May Cry is officially launching March 8th of next year. Shenmue 3 is launching August 27th of next year. And then Luigi's Mansion on the 3DS is going to be launching October 19th of this year.
I had a very strong reaction to Devil May Cry 5 coming out on the 8th of March.
Why?
Do you know why? Because that's also when The Division 2 is coming out, and I only have so many hours in the goddamn day. am I supposed to handle this? My two favorite games.
Same day. Oh, my God.
I don't have enough time or money for this shit.
On the bright side, it's not February. It's
February's reviews are going to start rolling in, and we're just going to be sitting here shaking like we don't have time.
Fuck this. Fuck all of this. We'll just quit the show before then.
It's January 29th, and we're done, guys. See you in March. We're on hiatus. Never mind that we're not in March either, because Devil May Cry and Division are going to take up all our time.
See you guys in June. Oh, man.
Shit.
That just means we got to take less shit for review.
Nah.
But yeah, that's all the news I got. I know there was some Rocket League and PUBG news this week. I'm guessing that you got that stuff.
I actually have something else in addition to that as well, but I'll bring it. Yeah, it's not anything fancy, but I have news.
It is Cole provided news.
Yeah, it's just kind of fancy in its own right, I guess.
That is special.
PUBG at Gamescom, they announced that PUBG is leaving Game Pass.
Game Preview.
We've been on Game Pass so much lately that I don't even know that Game Preview is a thing anymore. So we're leaving Game Preview for PUBG. And we're growing up. We're going to become a full-fledged game, like a big kid.
Getting big boy worship. Game.
Yeah. We don't gender assume. PUBG could be a girl.
Big game.
But we're getting the Sandhawk map. Not sure if you're familiar with anything PUBG-ish at all.
Not at all on my end. Nothing.
Sandhawk is pretty popular on PC. It's a 4v4 map, and there's been some adjustments made to it so that it's really fast-paced games. And they're pretty rapid-fire, which a normal PUBG game, if you're actually making it anywhere in it, can run you about 45 minutes to an hour. So some quick games is pretty nice, because this is one of those games that, you know, we sit down and we play when we've got all night. And when we don't, we play Rocket League.
Nice.
Because that's the only thing you can fit in 10 minutes. But in addition to the Sandhawk map, which will also have some new weapons and some new vehicles, we are getting War Mode. So
War
Mode was announced during E3, and this is a deathmatch battle royale combo kind of game mode, where instead of once you die, you're out, like in typical battle royale, you actually get to respawn and you parachute in again with new weapons, and you just try again, keep going. It plays out kind of like attrition or like a team deathmatch in Call of Duty. So whoever gets the most points wins, and that's when it ends, as opposed to when you get down to just the last man standing. There will be achievements added to the game, finally.
Yay! Hooray!
Bonus points. Your progress from game preview will roll over to the full game. So all those sweet chicken dinners get to go with you, and you'll get your achievements for them.
So you're going to have 1,000 out of 1,000 the day it launches on full release?
No. I haven't even looked at the achievement list for it yet, but I doubt, like, I don't play it as much as I'd like to. I'll tell you why, because PUBG is one of those games where you have to be able to hear what's going on.
Mm.
And I dropped my controller and killed it, in that it still works for playing, but when I plug my headset into it, my mic doesn't broadcast anymore. I can get game sound and I can get chat sound, but I can't broadcast. So I've been having to use my actual stream mic through the Xbox Party app on the PC to when I'm playing games. And that means I don't have any game sound. So I've played nothing but Rocket League, because I don't need to hear shit to play Rocket League.
That works.
Or The Division. I played The Division lately too, because
we got to play that again sometime soon.
In about 20 days, when the new shield comes up, is when I'll play again, because I've already completed all the shield challenges that are currently available.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So, that took me about
3 days. Oh, you.
There's also a new PUBG controller. It's pretty fancy. It's a black with digital camo effect.
Nice.
And it has the left thumbstick has a navy blue color on the underside of it, like a peekaboo color, if you will. Peek-a-boo. And then, yeah, the D-pad is gold.
Ooh.
Yeah, fancy. And a metallic and everything.
Is it gold or is it chicken colored?
No, it's gold. It's not yeller.
Yeller.
And it's gold. So it's very nice, very lovely. And I think it's only for pre-order. I don't think it's actually releasing until October. Since cool. I'm already on controllers, No Time for Games beat me to it. Thanks, No Time. Spoilers. they announced new Design Lab controller options.
Oh, nice. And
yeah, you can actually get the shadow bodies and the camo bodies as options now, nice. Which is pretty cool. I've always wanted one of the Dawn Shadow controllers.
Oh, me too. The pink one.
Yeah, but then it's like, but I could get a Design Lab controller and I want the pink buttons, like the D-pad and stuff to go with it. And now you can. And you can get the metallic. And it's just like, yeah, that would be a pretty hardcore controller.
See, No Time mentioned the Ocean Shadow body available. That's the one I wanted, and I found a used one at GameStop. I brought it home, and it wouldn't hold a charge at all. Like, it didn't hold a charge. It didn't sync up, so obviously it was a defect. I got in touch with Microsoft because they didn't have any more at the GameStop I went to. That was their last Ocean Shadow, so I contacted Microsoft. They said that they would send a new one, and they sent the red one instead.
See, I like the red one, too, though.
So I have the ocean, what is it? Or not ocean, the volcano shadow, something volcanic, like that.
Yeah,
volcanic shadow. I wanted blue.
The blue one is lovely, though.
Hear that? Or I want so bad to find a Sea of Thieves controller.
Yeah, good luck.
Yeah, no shit.
I dropped my pen. Good luck, though. That shit's not happening.
Yeah, I know. I had an opportunity to import one from Europe for $100, and I couldn't pull the trigger on it. That's just a bit too much for me.
Wait, was it $100 after, currency?
Yeah.
Wow. I can't think of the word I'm looking for the currency.
Exchange?
Yes.
Yeah, after exchange rate, it was like $100. $100 American plus shipping.
American, so it'd
probably
money.
Be like $110, $115. And if it was an Elite, maybe I could see spending that much. But
it is a lot to pay. I mean, I guess given that it was limited edition and everything, it's a fair price for it now.
Yeah.
But it's still a lot to pay.
It is. But it is like, a gorgeous controller.
It's pretty, but it doesn't do anything different. That's actually what Studen and I were just talking about earlier. We were like going back and forth because he wants one of the all blue controllers.
Mm.
And he was like, but I have a hard time paying the money for it because if I was going to pay that much for a controller, I'd just get an Elite because it's an actual upgrade.
Yeah. I'm waiting to hear whatever the Elite version 2 is going to be. There's been rumors about it for so long. I hope it actually happens.
I don't know what they could possibly do to one, though.
Bluetooth, like, what first of all.
Do the Elites not have Bluetooth?
No.
Really?
They were pre-Bluetooth controllers.
Oh.
And they just, as far as I know, they've never added it to it. The other thing that was rumored was adjustable tension in the thumbsticks, which if that happened, I would immediately buy one.
Hmm.
Because that is my biggest complaint with the Xbox One controller is that the sticks are just too loose. Compare it to a 360 controller and how tight those analog sticks were.
I think we've had this discussion before where I like
multiple times, I'm sure.
Yeah, where I like the looser tension because it's easier on my arthritis that I don't have to press as hard.
So if they had adjustable tension, that would be perfect.
It's true. It's not a bad thing.
I could get it nice and tight. You could get it nice and loose.
That's some bad phrasing.
Giggity.
Onward,
what other news?
Of dicks.
Speaking of dicks.
The Rocket League progression update is hitting on the 29th of August. So we have an official date for it now. They say that is pending first party certification, though. So even though they've given us a day, it's not particularly carved in stone.
It's
we've
a
talked
should
about
be day.
Yeah, it's a cross your fingers and hope nothing fucks up day. there's a lot going on in this update, but not everything that we were expecting. Some of the biggest things is that they will be changing the progression system, hence it being called the progression update. They're taking away the level 75 cap.
Ooh, I'm probably like level 12 or something shitty.
Love your heart. I say with as much as I play Rocket League, I'm only like 65 or 66. So even I hadn't capped out yet. But now
give it time.
Suda, I think, is at like 73 or 74. He was close to capping out.
No.
So the caps will be gone and you'll continue to unlock the free items even after you hit what used to be the cap. You can just keep going. As far as I know, it's indefinite. I don't think there's a new cap at all. It's just goodbye. Good luck to you. Have fun. They're adding a new clubs feature, which sounds very much so like clans. You'll be able to have up to 20 people in your club, and you'll be able to organize playing games as a team.
Nifty.
I don't see them going full Battle Royale in Rocket League, though, and having 20 people on the court at any time.
20v20.
But you never know.
That Rocket would be League entertaining.
Rocket League has done some shit. I mean, drop shot is a thing. So, you know, Rocket League has done some shit.
True.
The Rocket Pass that we were expecting to be included in this update originally is slated to release 1 week after the progression update. So we are going to get two updates within 2 weeks time. That will include the whole new. It's basically like the season passes for Fortnite.
Yeah.
Where you pay $10 or whatever. I think it's going to be 10, and you'll get keys and cosmetic items that you can't just unlock for free. We are getting new achievements.
Hooray, achievements!
What? This game is 3 years old. What are we doing? I can't imagine that there's very many achievements, because isn't the cap on achievements 2,000?
I didn't think there was a cap anymore.
Oh, is there not?
Maybe there is. I don't remember. I really don't.
Because I'm pretty sure that Rocket League is currently sitting at 1950.
Good
so
year.
I'm curious to see what we end up with after that. They will also be adding avatar borders. So if you've played Rocket League since any of the last updates, they've added player banners. I think it was about a year ago they added the player banners. You unlock them just like everything else in the game, and they show up whenever you get a goal. So now they'll be adding the avatar borders so that you can customize what is around your gamer pick in addition to your calling card. So it's snazzying it up a little. I think at this point they're basically just kind of like ramrodding any kind of customization ahead of they can.
People will spend more on crates.
Yeah.
And keys.
I really wish they would just drop the crates completely, but that's never gonna happen. A girl can dream, but it's never gonna happen.
Probably not.
But yeah, that's it. That's all I got.
Cool. That's a lot of news this week. Holy shit.
That's a lot of news. Can I throw my notebook away now?
I mean, I would hold on to it because we have reviews to do.
Son of a bitch. All right.
Should we just dive into them?
Might as well. I've got the notebooks.
Might as well. First game to talk about tonight is called Warhammer 40K Inquisitor Martyr, developed by Neocore Games, published by Neocore Games, Big Ben Interactive, and Maximum Games. Released August 23rd on Xbox One, PS4 for $59.99, previously released on PC for $49.99. Far from the guiding light of the God Emperor, torn apart by the foul tempests that distort reality, the Caligari sector is slowly rotting away from the inside, tainted by the chaos gods. Purge the unclean with the most powerful agents of the Imperium. This is a crazy one.
Can we just start off with that name?
What, the game name or the names that I read during the description?
That too, because it's all just a cluster fucking mouthful.
It is Warhammer 40K or 40,000, depending on how you want to say it. Inquisitor, Martyr.
Yes.
There's a lot there.
I was going to say that five times fast, and I stopped myself because you've done that before, and I don't want you to. I'd like to go to bed sometime tonight.
All right. Well, then you start off with this one. Tell us about it.
This is basically Warhammer meets Diablo.
Diablo.
And I've never even played Diablo, but I've seen enough of it to be like, yeah, this is familiar. It is an action RPG, and you play, trying to think of a good way to say all these names is what I'm trying to do. You play as one of a class of inquisitors who are basically tasked with, they're supposed to investigate like heresy and things like that. Although they spend an awful lot of time just murdering stuff, and there's not a whole lot of investigation.
Yeah, really there's a lot of murder in this game.
Every now and then you might go find a thing, but you're going to murder 900 things to go find a thing.
Not that that's a bad thing. Let's point that out.
No, because at least it keeps you busy.
Keeps you busy.
Oh, Lord. The three classes that you play as are a crusader. I believe this is pronounced a psyker or an assassin. I preferred the assassin. I think you were playing as a crusader, right?
I was a crusader, yes.
Yeah, so I like the assassin because each different class has three different options for special abilities and weapon types that they're going to excel with. The assassin that I played with had the ability to project two forms of herself out to go distract enemies so that you could flank around them and beat the shit out of them from behind. I like that. That's a very handy way to dispatch enemies. When I was playing single player, it worked out far better than when we played co-op, though.
Yeah, when we played co-op, shit got crazy, but we'll get there in a few.
We'll get there in a minute. But for single player, I almost felt like I was overpowered at times. I was just running through. And it may be, I did have the difficulty set down. I actually didn't have it set down on the easiest. You can set it to where it's basically like more story oriented and you don't have to worry about getting smashed and mutilated.
Which is nice in a game like this because things, you can easily get overwhelmed in this game.
Easily. And I had it set to easy, but not quite story easy. And I was just kind of running through and just smashing my way through. I think I did 9 or 10 missions before I even started taking damage from enemies. Oh, I was like, yeah, I can do this. I'm just murderizing everything and I'm good with this. But then we did play co-op and we got our shit handed to us.
I think part of that is because I was such a higher level than you, and I had, like, I was a more powerful character than yours, so
yeah,
you were stuck coming up to my level.
Yeah. One of the things, though, with playing the co-op, you cannot play the campaign co-op. You have
That's easily one of the biggest bummers with this game, is you could only play, like, some of the accessory side missions. Every time we tried to play a story, like continue on with my campaign and do one of my missions, it's like you cannot play story mode in co-op.
Yeah, it was very limiting in what it would let you do. There is PvP. I didn't see it though, and that leads me to my other big complaint about the game. The menus are really convoluted. Like as much fun as I was having, didn't matter if I couldn't find my shit. Yeah. And there's not a lot in the way of explanations as far as what kind of gear you want to use for certain classes that might be better. There's not anything that really explains to you. I think I was on my 5th or 6th mission before I even realized I could change my weapons.
Really?
And I was just like, when I did it, I was like, oh, well, I feel dumb. Because I knew I was getting that, you know, getting the weapons and stuff, but I just could not figure out where they were at and what to do with them.
Mm.
But once I actually managed to find the inventory screen and everything, then it felt a little more, as far as changing the weapons go, it felt a little more intuitive. But then there were different modifiers and power-ups that I still haven't figured out. Like, I just don't understand them.
Yeah, it's like stat overload with this game, where there are so many different stats and so many different qualifiers to different stats that it gets really confusing to know if what the game is saying is a higher quality item, if it's going to help you, or if it's just going to be a little bit stronger, but kind of miss out on some of the perks the other weapon would have. It's very convoluted. There's just too much information to keep track of and not enough explanation as to what does what.
Yeah, a little more tips and tricks popping up here and there would be helpful in some way or another. Even though you pick up loot and stuff too, and this led to me not being able to figure out the whole inventory initially, you pick up loot as you're playing a mission. Like, you'll kill enemies and you'll complete an objective, and loot drops, and then you can't find it. And the reason is because you don't actually get it until you get out of the mission.
Yeah, so if you're a fan of
Diablo. Nothing tells you that.
Yeah, if you're a fan of Diablo, where a new legendary item drops and you're like, oh, I can't wait to test this out right away, that's not going to happen. And another thing that you pointed out is this game is mission structured instead of just like an open area like Diablo, where you just carry on from area to area. Or it's more along the lines of the Rifts, where you have randomly generated areas that you go into, complete the mission, and then move on to the next mission. It's not like one whole entire world that you could explore on a whim.
That's the other thing with the star map. There's not, and again, it falls back on there's not enough explanation for all the shit going on. It's really hard to tell what kind of mission you can start and if you're going to be leveled enough to play it. Like, until you start figuring out what all the random green numbers and purple numbers and different icons really mean, you're just going to be sitting there going, well, I hope I can complete this.
And there's even missions. I had missions where I was supposed to trail someone. I don't know if I was supposed to trail them and wait for them to get to a certain area before I kill them. The first time I played through the mission, I was just clearing out the enemies as I went through, and I apparently didn't go quick enough because it just popped up mission failed and whoever I was supposed to go after got away. The second time I played it, I went directly to them and I killed them, and it's like, oh, mission failed again. Like, I don't know what, there's a lot of missions that aren't very clear on what you're supposed to do. And it doesn't help that the text is a bit on the small side. There were times I had to get up from my chair and get closer to the TV just so I could read what the hell I was supposed to do.
I was happy when I first saw the game load up and start that first cutscene, even before you can change any of your settings. There's already subtitles automatically turned on for that opening sequence, but it's all so fucking small that you just can't even see it. And so you can go into the settings and you can set that up, and I couldn't tell that it made a lick of difference.
No.
Like, it was still just so tight. And I have a 55-inch TV, I think it is, and I sit really damn close to it because I'm fucking blind and old. And I was still sitting there like, I can't see this shit. And the text, what text there is on the screen. Like, if you find, like lore journals or they're not journals, but they're the computer screens.
Like the terminals.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
And then the pop-ups dialogue when you're getting communication from ships and stuff. It all pops up, and it's all on the screen, and it's all subtitled out, but there's just so tiny. Much text, and it's so small, and it goes so fast that you couldn't read it if you had to.
No.
So
that said, I think the game is fucking awesome. It sounds like we have a lot of gripes about it, and we do have some legit gripes with the game, but I don't think they impeded my enjoyment of the game. I was having a blast with it. This is one of those games where I know for a fact when we're done recording this show, I'm going to go play a couple more missions.
Nice. Yeah, I had a good time with it. I want to go back and spend more time on it. Not after the show, because I have to sleep sometime.
Bitch.
But I will happily play it again, and I want to finish the story off at the very least. I just wish it held your hand a little more. And I know there are people who are going to roll their eyes and groan and be like, there's Cole bitching that a game doesn't help her out enough. But trust me, there's like three different currencies in the game, and it doesn't explain any of that shit. And I just want a little more help.
Yeah. I don't think it necessarily needs a little more help, just a little more explanation for stuff.
Yeah.
And a little bit more streamlined. It's tough finding what you need to do when you need to do it sometimes. It's
like just, when we were trying to kick each other out of the parties.
Yeah.
And the only way you can do that is set your party to private, which you would think, okay, I've invited somebody and I could set the party to private to keep somebody else from joining us. But no, it just kicks everybody back out. And bye, yeah. Fuck you.
Overall, though, $60, I'm giving it a buy it. It's not like a full-fledged must-own kind of game. It does have some issues that I hope gets patched out or, you know, reworked a bit, fine-tuned. But I think if you're looking for a good Diablo-esque style game and you're good with a nice, bloody, gory romp through a bunch of space areas and a bunch of, like, frozen lakes and shit like that, I think you're going to have a good time.
Yeah, I can agree with that. I'd give it a buy it, too. Just be aware of what you're going into and know that this is basically going to cater to the kind of hardcore RPG fans who want to set and min-max out a skill set and all of that. And that I hope there's a wiki, you know, because that would help. Yeah.
That said, we definitely have to play this one more.
Yeah, but not tonight.
Because online worked really well. I didn't see any kind of lag or issues on my end. I know you said you ran into it a bit, but you also dropped out of a party because your kids started watching Netflix.
So yeah.
I'm putting that on you.
Yeah, that was definitely my router is shit. And so that was definitely on my router and my children.
Goddamn kids watching but their Netflixes.
Otherwise, I didn't have any kind of issue. I don't know what to do. That router is so awful and I can't wait to throw it out in the yard.
Set it on fire. Next game to talk about is called Fernsgate, developed by XCreate, published by Chemco, released August 15th on Xbox One and Windows 10 for $14.99, coming August 23rd to the Switch, so it's out now, and then also coming to Steam and PS4 and Vita. After awaking in some unfamiliar woods, Alex learns he has somehow ended up in Fernland, a world where peace and order have been replaced by conflict and destruction. Fighting to defend himself, Alex comes across a young woman by the name of Lita from a peaceful world like his own. What hidden truth awaits them as their adventure begins to unfold? Dark Mika covered this one, wrote in a review, and this is what she's got to say. Fernsgate is another old-school turn-based JRPG made by the same people that created As Divine Hearts. You play as Alex, some high school slub. What?
What's schlub,
a slub? Maybe? Just S-L-U-B. I'm thinking schlub.
Maybe she meant slut. Slob? Slob. That's possible, I guess.
I'm going with slub. Fuck it. Some high school slub. You poof into existence in a magical medieval land named Fernsland. It's like 90% of like all fantasy anime. An evil bastard with a next to impossible name to say or spell has taken the goddess's mana. He's then started stealing it from the outworlders, those who showed up like you did. Stealing mana kills them, so that's bad. And if you don't have enough mana, he turns you into a monster to serve him, which is actually kind of cool. More villains should do that. Anyway, it's up to you to find a party and go kick the shit out of this ass clown to free the world's people.
Wow.
Kick the shit out of this ass clown. Dark Mika, you never cease to amaze me with your reviews sometimes. As you level up, you get skills which can level up to do more damage. You also equip rings that lets you learn magic, which you can only use while the ring is equipped. The combat is really improved from As Divine Hearts. First off, it has buttons to redo previous moves that you can push, and another one that allows you to auto-attack till you push a different button. The way they auto-attack is based on the tactics you set, which is nice. I really like the auto-attack. It made fights move much faster. A fight that you know you can win, but takes time to go through all the menus and shit, goes from taking a couple of minutes to like 5 seconds if you use auto-battle. Just fucking yes. Honestly, 90% of my fights moved into just auto battle because it was faster and easier. I'm not going to even lie. I fucking loved it. I love auto battle. When they have auto battle in RPGs, I am so much happier.
Yeah, that seems like it would make things a lot easier. I don't think I've ever played an RPG with auto battle.
It's good. It is very, very helpful. The story is fairly small, just like As Divine Hearts. It's mostly just about going through the dungeons to get to the end, fighting a boss, and get a tiny bit of story. Two twists to the story. The rest of it is just same old, same old. One of the twists you'll figure out before it fully happens because it just feels like it's going to happen. The other twist should blindside you, hopefully, which is always a great thing to feel, at least to me. I always like video game surprises that don't fuck me over anyways, and that's pretty far and few between. You, your weapon, and your monster companions can all level up to 999, all of which will take forever to do. There's a fuck ton of different weapons for each character. Each upgrade is just adding damage dealt. However, there's also stats you can add to it, which you steal from other weapons and such. It's really cool. These stats that you can add range from giving you stat bonuses to having a percent chance of a type of debuff hitting an enemy when you land a hit to even giving you extra elemental defense or offense. Took me a while before I even bothered with this, but once I did, holy shit, did it open up the doors to getting through the game. So look into this early and start upgrading. It's kind of obviously important, more than I originally thought. Just came out for Xbox One. It should also be out on PS4, Vita, and Steam, and Switch, but it's not yet. Well, it's on Switch as of now, pretty much now when we started recording this. Came out today. On Xbox One, it's $15, which is where I assume it'll be on the other platforms as well. If you like old school RPGs, I say get it. Honestly, these kind of games aren't normally my cup of tea, and that showed with As Divine Hearts. I see why people would like it, but I didn't really enjoy it that much. This one, though, I really liked. So I say it's worth it. If you don't like these, wait till it's on sale to at least give it a try. Maybe it'll pull you in, because I'm interested in retrying As Divine Hearts now, thanks to this game.
Sounds good.
Good stuff. Yeah, I like when you play a game in a genre and it doesn't really click, and then you play another game in a genre and it makes you appreciate the genre that much more.
I find that that has happened a lot to me with RPGs. Because I felt like the first few I played, I didn't know what the fuck I was doing.
Yeah. I don't know. I need to dive into Fern's Gate. I bought it like the moment it came out. That's the main reason I didn't cover it, is because I would rather buy the game than get a review copy.
Damn.
Yeah. Hey, I preach on this show about supporting RPGs on Xbox One, so I got to practice what I preach.
It's a good point.
Damn right.
You're not a hypocrite. You might be a hypocrite over saying use an ad block on Twitch, but you made up for it with the devs.
I'm a hypocrite because I'm going to stay on Twitch despite being pissed off with their recent
policy
changes, but I could still get money from them, so I'm going to keep staying on here until that happens, which, fingers crossed, is hopefully going to be soon. That'll be nice.
Money, yes.
Money, money, money. Anyway, next game to talk about is called Tyler Model 005, developed by Reversed Interactive, published by Maximum Games, released August 21st on Xbox One and out of Steam Early Access for $9.99. Tyler Model 005 is a 3D action platformer and exploration game set in 1950s where you customize and control a spunky miniature robot named Tyler. Many years after powering down, Tyler is accidentally powered on during a thunderstorm and must discover what has happened to his creator and home. Cole, what is this game?
Well, that's most of it.
Helpful.
I love when the summary just does like 95% of my job for me. Like, explain the game. No, you already did it.
Okay, what do you do in the game?
You explore. And there is some platforming. There's a lot of platforming. There's a lot of emphasis on platforming here. And like a 3D world, you do play as a little animatronic robot that has been brought back to life during a thunderstorm. His name is Tyler. He has no idea what the fuck is going on, but he has some very specific needs and mechanics. One being that he is solar powered. So he needs to be in the light to charge, but he's in an abandoned house and there's not a lot of light to be had. So this adds a degree of difficulty to your exploration when you have to think about how you're going to cross certain areas when there's not enough light. Now, on the bright side, there are old lanterns pretty much everywhere. And if you can get to it, you can interact with it, turn it on. And by the time you're done with a room, most of it is illuminated, which can help, you know, with going around and platforming and looking for hidden areas in each part of the house. Your whole purpose is basically to just uncover what has happened to the people who helped create you and find out why the house has fallen into such disrepair and, you know, regain your memories as you explore. Initially, I kind of expected this to be more like a walking sim, but with a little robot. But you very quickly realize that you've got to do some pretty gnarly platforming to find your items. There are collectibles. There is actually combat. There are ants and wasps and spiders that you will get into fights with.
Uh-oh.
If you take damage from these insects, they actually affect your battery life. And so your battery will not hold as much of a charge. You will die more quickly when you are out of the light. You can find batteries hidden around the world, though. That will help improve your battery life again if you've taken a lot of damage. You are armed with a little tiny sword and just walking around and pulling the left trigger or right trigger, I'm sorry, will, you know, attack, and you can actually take out the ants are the worst to fight. They take maybe two or three hits, but even they're pretty mundane as far as enemies go. The spiders are easier to kill and don't damage you near as much, which seems kind of counterproductive. You'd think that the ants would be a lesser evil than spiders. What do I know? There's also wasps, but again, you're a robot and you kind of don't care about getting stung. There are collectibles hidden around in all the different rooms where you're solving these different little puzzles to regain your memories. The collectibles are mostly just supposed to be cosmetic, but you can combo certain items for an aesthetic that affects your actual, like, your attack and your ability to platform more quickly. And it just kind of changes up the gameplay a little bit. The biggest problem is that for a 3D platformer, the controls are really janky. And it's a little disappointing. Like, if you're trying to go up the stairs, you can't just press forward and jump up the stairs, because he might just sit there and jump constantly and never try to grapple and pull himself up. And you're just like, nah, come on, it's dark and my battery's gonna die before I get up three stairs. You know? it can be a little frustrating. I did actually figure out that if I turn and hit the stairs at an angle, he jumps up them better. And I don't understand why, but it's such an odd quirk, and it worked. Nice. You can platform and grapple and climb on pretty much every surface in the house, which is really interesting. You can move boxes around and stack them up. You can move items that are on shelves, like mugs and stuff, to hit switches to solve your puzzles. There's a lot of interactivity going on here, but there are also hidden throughout the different rooms in the story, there are these puzzles that unlock weird tower defense like mini games. The only way to access these is by completing a little puzzle where you have to, like, light up every little bulb on a portal. I'm sorry. And then you can access these mini games. The weird thing about them, though, is that they're completely optional. They're not tied to any achievements. They're not tied to any kind of progress whatsoever. It's just, hey, if you want to. And
I mean, it's there if you want, I guess.
Yeah.
Added content.
But they feel a little out of place, given the whole, like, this is a platformer and this, you know, explore. And, oh, by the way, here, protect the portal. And you're like, why are you here? What is this?
What even are you?
Yeah. And unfortunately, that kind of stems over to a lot of other aspects of the game as well. You could be perfectly fine just platforming, exploring, and knocking out the ants and the spiders as they pop up. But there's this whole element of you kill the ants and spiders and the wasp and you get experience points, and then you can find portals, like these little upgrade stations and upgrade your platforming ability and how fast you can climb, how much damage you put out, and how you can choose for it to show you if there's collectibles you've missed in a room. And it just seems kind of unnecessary, if that makes sense. Like, again, you're just like, okay, but I was just killing things fine. I don't I don't need to really be able to whack the ants in one hit when two does it, you know? It's just another... It's like they didn't feel like the game could carry itself on its story and its exploration alone, and so they were trying to pad it with some other stuff.
Yeah.
apart from that and the controls just being a little janky, the funny thing about the controls being off is that it was really only frustrating up until the point where I would be trying to climb up somewhere high and I would fall. And then I would fall all the way to the bottom, which doesn't hurt you, but it means you have to take your time and sit there and jump a million times to try to get back up again. But eventually you can unlock an ability where you can kind of rewind time for a few seconds. Very life is strangey. So if you're starting to fall,
rewind. You
just rewind your ass back a few minutes and you're fine. Like, I don't know why they didn't just include that from the beginning.
Because you got to earn it.
No, but you can't make you have to earn something that can make a janky game a little easier to get through. I have had like a really good time with the game, though. I enjoy the character. It is voice acted. The voice acting, it's hit or miss. There's some moments where it's pretty good, and there's others you're like, that was such an odd way to make that statement. But it is an adorable game, and the story has been really interesting, and I've enjoyed it. I just wish it was a little more polished and smoother, if that makes sense.
Well, as it stands, for $10, what do you think?
For $10, though, I definitely give it a buy. It even as janky as it is, and like I said, I hope that they put a little more polish in it and smooth out the controls. I'd like to be able to platform, you know, climb up a bookcase by pressing A twice instead of 20 times. But if you can, you know, if you can overlook it, and it's funny how you kind of just get used to the controls and you're just like, this is a thing, and you go. But if you can, you know, you got the patience to overlook that, you're going to have a good time.
Cool. Sounds good.
Yay. Next. Yay.
Next up is not either of us, so we're going to go to a guest review.
What?
Yeah. Tim Ekibis is here, so let's go to him.
Yay.
All right, next game to talk about is called Death's Gambit, developed by White Rabbit, published by Adult Swim Games. It released August 14th on Steam and PS4 for $19.99. Death's Gambit is a challenging 2D action platformer with deep RPG elements. As an agent of death bound to a service, unravel the mystery of Cyrodiil and discover the true price of immortality. Checking out the price of immortality, Tim Ekibis, how are you doing?
I'm good.
I am good. Now that you're asking me that question, I'll answer it.
Howdy. How's that?
Hi there. Man. All right. Yeah. Here we are in the aftermath of the SummerSlam, talking about video games. Definitely not wrestling.
Although you had some good predictions. We'll just put that out there.
I did for TakeOver, and my predictions for SummerSlam were like, okay.
If people haven't heard that show, they should go back and check it out.
Yeah, and it's always fun to listen to predictions after you know whether or not they're wrong.
It's like, these guys are fucking stupid.
Yeah, or like, man, he was exactly right, which I was in a few cases. But I mean, I kind of still think Becky Lynch won coming out of that evening. It's really funny kind of watching WWE spinning its tires, trying to figure out, like, wait, they're supposed to boo her. But they're cheering her really hard.
I don't get it. I don't understand.
It's just it's like they just ran into the Daniel Bryan wall again. And like the fans sensed it. Like, oh, they want us to not like Becky. Well, guess what? Now we're gonna like her harder than ever.
That's how it should be.
It's been a good week of the wrestling, right up through Raw and SmackDown. It's good stuff, man.
To piggyback off that, is Death's Gambit good?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Death's Gambit. Okay. Whew. Yeah. So yeah, when they say like 2D side-scrolling adventure with RPG elements, what they're really dancing around is that this game is kind of like Dark Souls. That's what they're getting at. Which means, I guess, it's like Salt and Sanctuary, which it's like Dark Souls, and then it's like Castlevania again. Here we are. We've come full circle.
Yay.
So, yeah, it has a lot of familiar, like, literally when I'm making my, or choosing my character class, my wife was like, is this like a Souls game? And I was like, yeah, kind of, because the screen kind of looks like it, and you pick your class, and then you pick your gift, and then you go in there. And yeah, and when you, pardon, you have like a limited healing item that recharges when you reach, you know, certain checkpoints around the land. And at those checkpoints, you can also trade in the, I don't remember what they're called. Let's call them souls for the sake of simplicity. You can trade them in to level up and do some other stuff there. And when you die, so unlike a Souls game, this game does do some neat twists on kind of that formula. When you die, you don't drop your like currency. You drop a phoenix feather or your healing item. So you will drop one of those. So if you have three, you will drop that, and then you only have two. Okay. Right. So either you go back to where you died and you pick that sucker up, or you can pay souls at the said checkpoint thing just to restore it. Which I thought was interesting, that you don't necessarily lose like your experience. So if you have a ton of stuff to spend on experience and then you die, you're not under any threat of losing that, really, or even the Phoenix Feather, because it's pretty easy to just grind up enough currency to get that thing back, even if it is an annoyance. So that's
so it sounds more forgiving in that aspect.
A little bit in that aspect. You can also, which I thought was interesting, you can invest your Phoenix Feathers into making your character stronger, so you can have less healing and more offense. So it's like if you have four feathers, like, okay, I'm going to invest one feather in making my attacks 10% stronger instead of having four healing charges. Okay, sure. Maybe I'll die less if everything else is dead, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sounds great. Another cool thing is there's like scattered throughout levels, you're going to find books, like lore books for the bosses, which give you a little bit of information on them and then bonus damage against them, which is another really cool thing. Another cool thing is your
I love character, your segue music.
Yeah, your character, you know, so you start off with like your basic weapon, or each character. Sorry, I didn't silence my phone. I'm a freaking unprofessional jackass. Yeah. The hell was I going to say? Yeah. Okay. So, you know, you start out with your character class, and characters can equip different weapons with based on their different statistics. You can kind of branch off, you know, you don't seem locked in much like, you know, similar to a Souls game. But the cool thing is you get, skills and abilities to use. So as a, all right, phone. Oh shit. Oh, I'll just throw it. Whatever. Who needs it? You know, I was playing a character who started off with a big two-handed sword, so I got an ability that let me do this, like, big jumping, slamming slash, and he got, like, another kind of, like, dash forward slash thing. So it's just cool to have, like, those abilities involved. And they're sort of on a cooldown, but sort of also you need to hit the enemy a few times to charge them up. I also spent some time as a mage, and that was cool because I had, like, a fire spell and a lightning spell, and like if you using them had different effects that was really neat. So it's like you could cast the fire spell twice, that would do something. You could cast the fire spell once, that would do something. You could cast fire and lightning, that would do a something, which was cool. That was a really neat thing. And yeah, there's lots of different skills for each kind of character class, though you need some are bound to particular weapons, which is annoying because they don't tell you what that might be when you are perhaps buying them from a merchant. And I'm like, oh, cool, I'm buying an ability. Oh, shit, I can't use it. The game looks good. You know, it's got 2D, you know, pixel art style, blah, 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 blah. Sorry, that's so dismissive. No, but it's got a pretty neat aesthetic to it. Like, especially their death is a prominent character in this game. He looks really good. And also in a story flashback shows up in an apron, which is hilarious.
Oh my lord.
Considering his appearance as this big vulture thing with a sickle. That's pretty great.
I want to play this game now just to see that flashback.
Yeah, and it's not far into the game. so yeah, and obviously there's flashbacks, so it has a bit more pointed story than your average Souls game, where you have to extrapolate a lot of it from items you find on the ground. So kind of the problem with this game is it doesn't feel great to play it, which is a big problem.
In what way?
So your character, when you jump, you feel like, I don't know, kind of heavy. It's like you jump and you fall very quickly. Like there's not like a good sense of momentum, which makes platforming like not feel good. When you are in combat, you don't get a good sense of impact. Like when you hit an enemy with, you know, my big two-handed sword, it just like, it doesn't feel like it hit them. I mean, it hit them because it did damage, but it just doesn't feel like it has any weight. And, you know, it just doesn't feel like the enemies have mass, like your attacks have mass. It just feels very light and like doesn't give you very good feedback, like when you're striking an enemy and like when your character is getting hit, you know?
No.
But yeah, just like almost immediately, I'm just like, oh, it just doesn't feel good. It just feels so light. Like I want to feel that impact of like my big heavy sword, like hitting an enemy, you know, seeing them like stagger or something like that. Seeing my weapon react, it's just seeing something happen, but it just like didn't seem like it was really registering. Like it's kind of hard to describe on like a very, you know, kinetic level, you know? It felt a little bit better. Like I said, I tried like some melee class and some magic class. Like the magic felt a little better because I wasn't actually, you know, I'm not in melee combat with an enemy, but you know, not everyone's going to play the game as a mage. And just like that aspect. Yeah. Like, and there is like quite a bit of platforming, in this game, no doubt. It is 2D and has some, early on, there was like some tricky platformy sections around. Another thing that just baffled me is that in the year 2018, this game does not have like an equipment comparison thing, like when you're buying items or whether you're just looking at them in your inventory. Like if you're looking at an item in your inventory and you want to compare it to what you have equipped, like you have to look at what you have equipped and then look at the item in your inventory and then really? Say, oh, okay. Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
What the hell?
Isn't that nuts?
Yeah, it's that's pretty so crazy. Weird.
Yeah. So it's just like, maybe I was missing something. Maybe there was like a button prompt I could have used to call it up and I'll feel like an idiot. Someone points it out to me, but I just was just like, what? Like where? What? I was so confused. But yeah, just the real beef is just the gameplay doesn't feel all there, you know? And you know, at the same time, I mean, this is the month of Metroidvania. And I'm playing a lot of, Guacamelee 2, which I'll have for review next week. And, what's that other game? Dead Cells. And like just the combat in both those games feels like really good and really impactful. And then like going and playing this, it just felt so like, just not great, man. Just not great. But, at the same time, though, as a Dark Souls fan, I could tell you that Dark Souls people are crazy and, you know, will do anything to chase that high of Dark Souls. So there's definitely value in this game. It's not like the combat's not abhorrent, but it definitely holds it back and it definitely makes it not rise to the top in this month where things are so competitive in this genre space. Do you want to ask me for a verdict?
Yeah, I didn't. You left it on an so I thought there was more to it. So overall, $20 on this one. What do you think of it?
This is a like a try it or a wait and see sort of deal. Like that, you know, you always like to ask me like, could they fix this in a patch? And yeah, I think they could. You know, there's a lot of games out right now in this genre. I think it might be like a throw it on your wish list, like a wait and see. It's still like a good game. It just like there's a lot of good going on here with just like the overall world design and the look of the game and, you know, a lot of the design choices they made just the combat really holds it back, I think, from being exceptional and for being a like slam in the dunk recommendation.
So basically, it's worth playing, but maybe not immediately.
Yeah, I said slam in the dunk.
Slam in the dunk.
Today,
baby.
Today was longer than I thought it was.
Bomb in the hoops.
Yeah. Touching the down. Touching that the soft down. Running home.
Oh, man. Tim, it is always good having you on. Yeah. I know we'll have you back on again next week. Do you have any final thoughts?
I do not. Sorry. I got nothing. Slamming the dunk, man. Come on and slam, and welcome to the jam.
All right, and it's back to us.
Yay!
You sound so excited.
It was a delayed response, and I'm not particularly sure why. It just kind of took a moment to click.
Anyway, we got one final game to talk about tonight. That is called Polygod, developed and published by Crafted Games. Released August 17th on Xbox One, Switch, and PC for $14.99, blending a fast-paced Quake-esque feel with randomness, difficulty, and our handcrafted power-up system, Polygod is a hardcore gamer and speedrunner's dream. Only the most skilled and strategic players will defeat the Trial of the Gods, which immediately rules me out. So, so Cole, what did you think of Polygod?
Oh, boy. Hardcore roguelite fans dream that... That's a little much.
Hardcore gamer and speedrunner's dream.
Yeah, that's a little much. Maybe speedrunners, maybe.
So what is this game?
Polygod is a roguelike. Although I use the term kind of loosely because you can choose seeds and keep retrying the seed over if you die. But the whole idea is you start the game as a faceless assassin. Although there are other characters you can unlock if you can manage to get anywhere. So you start the game as a faceless assassin who wants to ascend to become a god. And in order to do that, they have to take on the Trial of the Gods and go through 7 different levels. Each is capped off with a holy champion that must be destroyed in order to proceed. The game randomly generates, but you do have the seeds. You can share seed numbers, enter the seed code, start a seed that you've enjoyed before. If you want to, it's very lenient as far as how you use the seeds to get the different levels back the way you would like them. So you're not stuck with a different level every time. If you had a run that you enjoyed, you can duplicate it and do it again. Each level just kind of drops you into a random world, and there's a pretty hefty array of enemies to be had in these worlds. They're essentially a first-person bullet hell. If you've played Immortal Redneck or Ziggurat, you've been in this type of game scenario before, and this would pretty much be what you would expect. It does have the low-poly appearance to it, though. Imagine that.
Yeah, a game called Polygod having a surprise. Polygonal look.
But it's definitely a tough game, and you are going to struggle and you are going to die a lot. I never made it past the third trial.
I never made it past the first trial. I dabbled with this game on the Switch, and you know, the game runs great on the Switch. It was fast, it was fluid, it looked great, easy to play on the Switch in handheld mode. I played it handheld. I played it docked. I am fucking awful at this game. I got my ass handed to me constantly. And it was one of those games where I couldn't keep going because I knew I was going to fail again.
Yeah. And I think that was one of the things that kind of stressed me out about it. I like these kind of games. I play them a lot. Like, this is my genre. I like to shoot shit. And I like to get pissed off when I die and start all over again. I don't know why. I guess I'm a glutton for punishment, but that's what I like.
You cray. And
so, yeah. Have you met me?
No, I haven't met you. I've only done the show with you. You've yet to actually meet.
But it's just, I don't know. There was just something about this one that made it so obscenely difficult. I think one of the things for me is that I just felt like the controls weren't always the most responsive when you were trying to dodge the bullets. It was just a little sluggish, a little difficult to move. It was stiff. I even went in. I always go in and set my sensitivity up on shooters crazy high because that's just how I'm used to playing. And because of the whole, my, you know, arthritis thing, I need to be able to barely touch a button and move 9 million miles at once. So I had my sensitivity set crazy high, and I still just felt like I was never moving fast enough to accomplish what I was trying to do. And so I was getting hit by the dumbest stuff. Apart from that, though, the worlds are incredibly bright and vibrant, almost to the point of being hard on your eyes. And it sounds a little crazy when you're talking about a low poly game to be like, look, this was hard on your eyes. But the color choices for the level designs, they're rough. You have a whole lot of contrasting colors going on and awkward color gradients that just don't work well together. And it can just really be distracting. And you're just sitting there going, it is hard to pay attention to the giant purple enemy when the sky is this weird purple green gradient. What is going on here?
I don't know. The colors really didn't bother me too much, but I'm not super sensitive to weird colors.
Yeah.
So I could definitely see how it could bother people, though, but it didn't really.
If you're a color theory nerd kind of person and you find yourself just affected by colors and the ambience that they set in a game and stuff, you're just going to be thrown into this and like, what am I doing? What is going on here? This is really hard to focus because there's not, when I think of colors in a game, I tend to think of them in that they should create a mood and they should direct you in a way. Like you want your eye to be drawn to important details. When the sky is the same color as the fucking enemies. And then you're sitting there going, I don't even know where to look. There's just shit everywhere. There's purple here, orange there, neon green here, and I don't know what I'm doing. So it was just the weirdest conundrum that I had with this game where I was just like, I can't focus. And so I really struggled with it because of that.
Well, as it stands for $15, what do you think of it?
I do give it a try. It played smoothly. It had online. I did not get to try out the online because I played pre-release. And I play a crazy ass early hours in the morning. This has been a reoccurring issue with online for me is that at 7 a.m., there's just nobody to play shit with. Yeah. And so I wasn't able to try out the online, but it does have online co-op, which I think could make, like, if I had somebody to play it with that could maybe keep me focused, that might have helped. But it is a difficult game. And if you know that going into it and you're like, yeah, this game is going to fuck my feelings hard, and you're expecting that, you're probably not going to be disappointed. If you're a big enough masochist that you're just like, look, here are my feelings laid out on the table. Have your way with them. That's what Polygod's going to do. Enjoy.
Yeah.
But, like I said, at least I appreciated that they had the whole seed system. And if you were getting fucked hardcore, you could just start a new seed.
And if you were doing good and you felt that you were getting just, you barely made it through something and you could do better, you could retry it.
Yeah. So, I mean, it does have that going for it.
Or if you're me, you'll just die and then die again and then die again and then cry and then die again.
It's just one of those where you need to know what you're going into with it. Yeah. Just don't be like, oh, it's a roguelike and think that you're going to get something like the Flame and the Flood, you know, and be like floating down a river half the time. No, this is, you're going to be leaping in the air. You're going to be dodging and ducking and trying to get the fuck out of the way. And you might not even be able to see what is hitting you because it's blending in with the sky.
Good stuff. Oh, man. Well, that is it for this episode. It was a fun one.
We're done.
We are done. Thanks. A lot of news this week. Only a handful of reviews. And a fun chat. I feel like
we're kind of done in record time.
I mean, it's been, this part of the show is still an hour 10-ish, something like that.
Yeah, but when I sometimes do like 45-minute reviews, I'm looking to be patted on the back for being a little quicker.
Well, to be fair, you only had two reviews on your own. We had an email review. We had something from Tim that I didn't even edit into the show yet as of when we're recording.
No, don't give away our secrets.
Shocker. I edit things.
We
really
do all this in one shot, and it's we're all here all the time.
That's why you just disappeared for 15 minutes.
I had to pee.
Oh, man. That is it. That is it, though. Thanks again to Andy at MegaCat for joining us and chatting about Coffee Crisis. Really cool game. You should check it out. Check out that awesome-ass soundtrack, too. Mm-hmm. I wonder if I could get some of the songs and play them on this show.
I don't know. I can't imagine why not.
Because I would have to buy the game on Steam. I might just buy it on Steam just so I have the soundtrack.
I mean, it wouldn't be the craziest thing you've ever done.
Very true.
It seems like a small price to pay compared to some of the rest of your collection.
Are you mocking me?
I would never, ever. I'm appalled that you would think I would mock you.
All right, fuck it. I'll grab the soundtrack. We'll play some stuff from Coffee Crisis. But that is it for this show. Cole, do you have any final words to end it all?
No, go play Rocket League or something.